Hey, what's up, everybody? I am John Ricard. This is Camera Work Podcast number 40. And we're making a few changes to the podcast, which I'm not going to tell you what they are. You may just notice them as you listen. But I do just want to say thank you, everyone who's ever listened to this podcast, and thank you for listening now. So again, my name is John Ricard. You can find me on Instagram at John Ricard, J-O-H-N-R-I-C-A-R-D. And you can find the podcast on YouTube and on iTunes. And I say that because if you're listening on iTunes, I want to make you aware that it is on YouTube. That might fit your listening habits a little better sometimes. And if you're listening on YouTube, it might be more convenient to catch it on iTunes. We keep the podcast primarily as an audio thing, but occasionally there's a little bit of a visual element that you might want to check out, okay? So our guest today is Stephen Gomez, portrait photographer.
How's it going?
Who's based in Brooklyn and lives really close to me, right?
Yep, good old Flatbush.
Right, cool. So this episode is our Gear Talk episode. And I wanted to talk about gear a bit, because I think it's funny that there's like this tendency to act as if like the camera doesn't matter. Like you're not supposed to care about the gear. That's always the cool move is for the photographer to go like, I don't really care what I shoot with, all I care about is the image. And I think there's a truth in that.
A little bit, yeah.
There's a truth in it. A great photographer with an iPhone is still a great photographer. Mm-hmm. But the part that's not 100% true is like, to me, if you're a poet, you do care about poetry. You're not just trying to tell the story. Like a poet doesn't tell his story through sculpture. He doesn't tell it through prose. He tells it through poetry because poetry is important to him. So for me, if I'm a photographer and I tell my story with a Nikon or a Leica or a Canon, for me personally, those things do make a difference. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being like in love with your gear.
Yeah.
You know, not to the point that you're so obsessed with it that you lose sight of the story that you're telling, but there is nothing wrong with being in love with the gear.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta enjoy the stuff you work with, right? What's the point of doing it if you just hate everything you use?
Right, and a lot of the stuff I own, just period, like my iPhone, my iPad, I love those things. I love my iPad. It's exactly like the commercial. You sit on a couch and you're like looking at videos on it. It's an amazing product. Nothing wrong with being in love with it, but it's not always love. There's a love-hate relationship we have with really everything in our life, our jobs, our spouses, our hobbies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And our gear. So I thought it'd be cool today to take your favorite camera and my favorite camera and talk about five things we love about the camera and five things we hate about the camera.
Sounds good.
Right?
Yeah.
And for my camera, it's going to be the Leica M240. And for you, what camera are we talking about?
We're talking about the Fujifilm X100T and all black.
Yeah, all black.
All black.
So, I don't know. Did you have a preference for the order? Because I would ask you what you love about it first.
I mean, that's the easiest one, right? Because there were just too many things, actually. I had to dwindle it down to five because there were so many. First and foremost is the form factor. I love the size of it. It's small. It's unobtrusive. I can put it in a bag if I have to. I mean, mostly I carry it around my neck, and I barely feel like it's there.
Right. I think that's a huge thing, right?
Yeah.
The size of the camera and the way it feels. Is that part of the form factor for you?
Yeah. The size is directly equal to the comfort of the camera. So if it was too big, I wouldn't carry it. If it was too small, I'd probably lose it.
Right.
But it's just the right size where if it's around my neck, I always know it's there, but I kind of forget that I'm walking around with it all the
time.
And
I notice now, like this month, which is January in New York, it's cold here, really February, it's cold here, and I'm wearing the sweatshirt and a coat all the time. And then I can put my M240 around my neck, and the weight of it doesn't bother me because it's around the coat, and I don't even feel it. But normally, the M240 is so heavy that I actually am very conscious if it's on my neck. So that doesn't work for me.
Do you sling it over your shoulder?
I do that a lot, right. But if I'm doing some of the street photography, I like it around my neck because I want you to see the camera.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
Same thing.
I'm not trying to hide it. Even if I'm shooting candids, I put that camera where it's very visible. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that people are actually talking to me about the camera because that opens the door to take their picture.
Yeah, that happens with this camera all the time. People ask me religiously if that's a film camera, and while I do normally carry my film camera when I'm carrying this, they just assume it's like a camera from the 40s or something. The second thing that I really like about it is the EVF and the OVF. The electronic viewfinder in here I find to be amazing. I haven't used any of the newer versions that have been in, like the Leica SL, which I hear is also amazing, or the Leica Q, but the EVF in here is fantastic. I mean, being able to see the exposure before you take it is great, making sure you're not clipping your highlights or anything like that. It's fantastic.
Right. Which one are you usually shooting with, the optical or the EVF?
During the day, I'm using the EVF, and if I'm shooting at night, I'll use the OVF.
Right. You're using the optical on the at night. Why is that?
I just find it easier on my eyes when I'm looking through the glass instead of looking through the actual sensor. Sometimes shooting at night with the EVF, it gets kind of hard to see because I keep the exposure preview on. So if, I mean, if I'm using flash, it's going to be underexposed, so I'm not going to be able to see the scene. So if I use the OVF, I can just see the frame lines, and I can see the focus. I can see what I'm shooting way easier.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it probably gets a little mushy at night, right?
When a little bit.
Through it, it's a little not hazy. As, like, crisp.
Yeah, it's a little hazy. Right. But that's just a matter of the technology and, you know,
yeah, I know the Sony's, because I have an EVF for my M240, and the Sony's, like when I look at my brother's Sony, I go, oh, okay, wow, that's what the EVF's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. I don't even like looking through it because I get used to the way the Leica looks, and I like it, and then I look at his and I get mad, so yeah, I try to avoid
that's
that.
That's funny. Yeah, it can get a little weird. The third thing I'm really big fan of is how sharp the Fuji lenses are, especially this 23mm f2. On this crop body, it's an equivalent to 35mm, but at it's really sharp at f2. At f4, it's sharp pretty much through the corners. But the glass, I mean, I've never used a lens that's not a non-professional lens that's as sharp as that.
As sharp as that. Yeah, yeah. I think if good once they marry the body and the chip together,
it's perfect. It's perfect.
Right. They're not asking that much of the lens. It just needs to be good with one chip at one focal length. But it drives me crazy. I think they made a huge mistake when they started coming out with these crop cameras. Mm-hmm. They should have kept the focal lengths the same. I mean, it was the dumbest decision because what they're saying is a 50mm lens, like for me, 50mm refers to an angle of view.
Yeah.
It means if I stand 10 feet away, I'm going to get three-quarter length on you, whatever that angle of view is if you calculate it. That's what a 50mm means to me. It's what it means to everyone in the world. Technically, it's some kind of measurement between the distance of the glass to the chip, but I don't care about that. I just know what a 50 looks like. I know what a 24 looks like. I know what an 85 looks like. Once they started making, say for Nikon, the DX lenses, or for Fuji, what do they call them? XF lens, I think?
The XF lenses, yeah.
All XF lens, right. Like, your camera has a 35mm lens on it, period. That's what that is. I don't care what the measurement is from the chip to the glass. Don't call it a, what did you say, 23?
It's a 23, yeah.
Yeah, why would they call it a 23 when and you have to constantly put that little footnote, that asterisk, it's really a 35.
Well, that has to do with the transition from digital from film to digital. Because on film, 35mm is always 35mm, but with digital, the sensor is a different size, so that changes the view of the lens.
But nobody cares. It's just that's a 35mm f/2 lens. That's what they should have called it.
That's what it comes down to. Yeah,
they should have been referring to the angle of view using the numbers we knew rather than mathematically telling us that's mathematically a 24.
It's a little bit of a pain in the butt, but once you kind of figure out the equivalence, it's like, all right, 23 is that, you know, a 35 is a 50, a 50 equivalent.
I mentioned on one of the podcasts I bought this Sony A6000, and when I've been looking for a wide angle lens, it drives me crazy
because
I'm completely confused as to what number it's supposed to be, and I'm like, I just want a 24. Just tell me what is the 24 for this camera.
That'd be like a 14mm?
I think it might be a 16, but I'm not sure.
Did
it make a 16? I think that's the 24, but
it's the number is times 1.5.
I have no idea. Yeah, I'm going to sit and do math when I'm trying to take a picture. It's so silly.
So after the lens, I would probably say the software is the Classic Chrome, the film simulation, I don't ever take my camera off that setting. That's
cool.
I mean, the only thing that would probably change that is if they send me a firmware update for the new Acros black and white that they came coming out with for the X-Pro 2. I might switch over to that and just make my camera a full-time monochrome camera.
Right.
But Classic Chrome is my favorite. I shoot everything in Classic Chrome. When I go to edit in Lightroom, I change the profile to Classic Chrome. And that's my color profile.
Yeah, that's cool. I never really check those on any of my cameras. There's always just on standard.
Adobe standard?
Yeah, I never check that. Whatever the standard default of the camera, I'm never on Vivid or whatever. Mm-hmm. But
Fuji has those settings too, but their film simulations are just fantastic.
I've read a lot that people do like that.
It's great.
So
it's just like I'm sure you have. I only ever got a chance to shoot Kodachrome once, but I loved it. And now they don't make it anymore, so Classic Chrome's the next closest thing I got to.
Yeah, I never really liked it, and I thought it was kind of cool that when you bought it, you could get this little envelope, and the envelope looked kind of cool, and you could drop the film right in this little thin envelope, but you couldn't tear the envelope. There was something I kind of liked about that whole thing, but the idea that I could go to where I used to put my film, Manhattan Color Labs, and it was $6 a roll, I think, and get it out in 2 hours. I mean, Kodachrome, you always had to mail to Rochester, so that just put it right out of the mix for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, you always used to read about how legendary it was, so occasionally I would shoot it.
Yeah.
But the ISO at 64 was so low that it was kind of useless.
It was, yeah, a little
for
bit.
For me, at least.
Yeah, you know? I could see that.
Right. Now, did we get to five, or was that four?
That was four. The fifth one is just the styling of the camera and the controls of it, the manual controls. Right. I like I said before, I really like old film cameras. And with this camera, I mean, it's got the shutter speeds, you've got the aperture right there on the lens, and I mean that's it doesn't have an ISO dial, so you have to change that within the camera, but I just set it to a custom function button, so it makes it really easy.
Right, you can access it in one setting.
You've got your exposure compensation, and as a little added bonus, your shutter release is threaded, so you can put a little shutter button on there, and I'm kind of a sucker for that kind of stuff, so I went ahead and got a little wooden shutter release for my shutter.
Right. Yeah, I think that idea too, I think they really should not have gotten rid of the aperture rings. They should have kept the electronic option, should have stayed in the cameras because it is more precise. Because when you've got a click aperture ring, you might go from 5.6 to f8, and you might try to fiddle with what's in between that. And use an electronic camera, you might have the perfect setting for 6.7, maybe one for 7.1, and then you go to f8. So when you want to be precise, it's nice to have that option. But plenty of times you can just dial it in and adjust in Lightroom if you're off by that 1/3 of a stop. They should have really kept the aperture rings to me on all the fixed lenses. Like, I wish they had kept that. And Fuji, I thought they were going to keep it because when they first came out, the lenses had the aperture rings. And then before you know it, they were making ones without it. And I thought that was an odd choice.
Though. Yeah, that was weird. But I'm glad they kept the aperture rings in there. I like the tactile feel of it. It just makes you feel like you're using a camera.
But they do have some lenses without the aperture
rings. There's one or two. There's that 27mm that doesn't have it, I believe, because it's the pancake lens. Right. And there's another one, but I can't remember off the top of my head, but the majority of them have the aperture ring now.
Good. They should. So tell us, what starts the list of what we don't like about the camera?
Well, of all the things I don't like about it, I would say the number one thing is when it goes to sleep and what it does to the EVF. So if I usually keep the camera on and I'm walking around, and I'm sure I can change this in the body, but then you sacrifice battery life, and I'd rather have a longer battery life. But the delay between when you hit the shutter to wake it up and take a picture is long enough where I've missed enough shots where it's annoyed me.
Yeah, a camera should shoot as its number one priority, should always shoot, and should never be sleeping.
Yeah, and whenever I leave it even on the optical viewfinder, sometimes it'll go to sleep and the frame lines will disappear. So when I bring the camera to my eye, if I have the eye sensor on, it'll take a second for the frame lines to appear. And it won't let me fire until the frame lines appear. And that annoys me to no degree.
I always thought what they should do with like any electronic type camera, there should be a thing where it has all these modes where you push the button and it shoots, or it doesn't shoot, or it's focusing, or it's waking up, whatever. But anytime you jam your finger down as hard as you can, it should take a picture.
Yeah.
Whether you're in focus, whether the frame lines are up, whether whatever. But there should always be this like emergency method of just like pushing that button down super hard, and it's going to take a picture whether you're in focus, priority, and whatever.
That's why I like just the older film cameras, because they're mechanical, and no matter what happens when you press that shutter button, it's going to take a shot.
Right, it always
takes a picture.
And
that can always be beneficial.
Right.
The second thing is, and while I like the sensor, I don't like the 16 megapixel sensor. Like, I don't like the size of it. The resolution, I mean, the quality of the images are great, the color, everything is fantastic. The size, I like the bigger sensors for the higher resolution. The raw files come out of the Fuji at about 4,000 on the long side. I kind of wish they were, it's big. I'm used to, when I do, you know, paid work, I like to use the Nikons because they give me a lot more room in case I need to crop. I don't crop often, but if I do, I like to have that added little padding on the side.
Right. And I see with the X Pro 2 that just got announced, Fuji has gone to 24 megapixels. So that's good at least.
That's the biggest complaint I think that most Fuji users had. While they loved everything else, they just wanted a bigger sensor just to feel like they fit in with the big kids.
Right. And I know though, but for my event work, I'm still on a D3, which is 12 megapixels. So I'm still under that 16. Again, I wouldn't mind having more, but for my event photography, no one has complained yet that the file is too small. So
that's good.
So far, the 12 is still holding up, but I wouldn't be adverse to a larger file for my event work. Yeah.
The fourth thing I think that annoys me a little bit too about the camera, and again, these are things that just annoy me. I don't necessarily, you know, I still love the camera despite these little annoyances, is the back dial. It's a little too soft for me, so sometimes I'll be shooting and I'll accidentally hit it with a flick of my finger, and it'll shoot my shutter speed, you know, two or three stops too fast, or two or three stops too low, and you know, that just gets on my nerves sometimes. And I mean, aside from that, it's not terrible. It's
and
just
that. And it's funny because again, I have an A6000, and if I did what I don't like about the Sony A6000, my list could be like 35 things long. And one of the things is exactly what you're saying with these like soft dials. I'm in manual mode all the time on the A6000, and there's a dial on the back that controls. I think it's the shutter. I can't remember at the moment. I think it's shutter. This dial, like you can just breathe on it and it spins.
Yeah, I hate that.
Like a Wheel of Fortune or something. And your settings are just completely different from what you wanted them to be. And why would you take something so important like shutter and put it on such a loose dial? It doesn't make sense.
It should be a little tighter. It should be a little tighter.
Yeah.
And the last thing, which I think every Fuji user will agree with me, is that the video is the worst thing I've ever seen on a modern day camera. I don't know what Fuji was thinking. I mean, if you're... Fuji did a great job with the camera, but if you're not going to go at least try with the video, don't even include it. Just leave it as a still camera. It's fine. We're not buying it for video. We're buying it for stills.
Yeah.
But I mean, the video is so bad.
I think it's like, I think they don't have the right memory for compression or something. That's always my guess.
It is so, I tried it once or twice just to see if I get it to work. It was so bad. It was so bad.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm never going to, I'll just buy a different camera for a video.
Right.
I'll go to Sony.
Right. So, I put together a little list of five that I love and hate for the M240.
Okay.
So I'm going to start like you did with what I love about the camera. All right. So the first thing I love about this camera is the look and the feel of it. I like the fact that they cared about how the camera looks. Because I look at something like Canon with those white lenses. They are ugly. I don't care what anybody says. A white lens on a black camera is ugly. And you can act like, you know, I don't care what it looks like. I just care that it works. But if that were the case, why are we trying to sell photographs? If the way things look don't matter, why should you hire me as a photographer? My entire business is built on the idea that the way you look is going to have some kind of effect on your money or your success or something. And that can sound bad in a way if we're not born handsome and pretty or whatever, but we're just saying that how things look is important if you're a photographer. So I love the way the camera looks. I love the fact that it looks like a World War II camera, that they understood that they didn't have to change. They didn't change things that don't need to be changed.
Yep.
If the parts that worked from 1940, like a car steering wheel, it works great, and we still use the same kind of steering wheel on a car, that's what they did. Mm-hmm. The things that worked from 1950 are still there on the camera. So the camera feels good and it looks good. And that's a huge thing for me. Number two, I didn't number mine, so mine might get a little confusing. But number two is that the camera is always the way I left it. Because, like, again, with my Sony, every time I turn it on, it's like you're rolling the dice, like, what mode am I going to be in? What focus? What is the reason the camera's going to tell me I can't take a picture now? Is it going to say I'm in the wrong focus mode? I'm in the wrong white balance? What is my ISO set on? This camera, because it uses, manual shutter speed dial here and a manual aperture ring, which is 90% of photography, is just those two things. Whatever I leave those on, they're always that way. Mm. There's no electronic reset of those two features.
You can just glance down at the camera.
I can glance at it and before I even turn it on, and I know what it is set on. So that's a huge thing. There's no mystery with the camera. It's always correct like that. Number three, no extra buttons on the camera. There are fewer buttons on the front of this camera than an old film Leica, and that is incredible. There are fewer controls on the top of the M240 than a 1950 like M4. They have removed buttons from the camera rather than adding buttons. And on the back, there's like one row of buttons and a little dial, and that's it. They've kept it very uncluttered. There's not a lot of confusing little switches and extra features. They really, really gave it a lot of thought. And on this camera, they removed something called the frame preview lever.
Yeah.
Completely useless thing. I can't imagine why anyone needs this. Basically, what it does is, like, when you're looking through the glass viewfinder of a Leica, you're seeing around 28 millimeters, somewhere between 35 and 28 millimeters. Yeah. So they just a little switch, you could flip it, and like this little white frame pops up and shows you
50.
Where a 50 is and where a 90 is. It's just a white box inside of the big image that you're looking at. It's like a letterbox, letting you know what it would look like if you put a 50 on.
Yeah.
You move it again, it tells you what it looks like if you put a 90 on. I mean, for you to need this, like, you must be, that must be your first day of photography.
Well, it was mostly aimed for the film users back in the day, because I believe now, isn't the rangefinder electronic inside there, like the frame lens are electronic.
Yeah, they're like they're like LCD or whatever.
Yeah, back in the day, you needed the lever so you could see if you're going to change your focal length or when you put the lens on.
But I'm saying, but you don't need to know that because you should be able to look at a scene and know what lens you need for it. I've never in my life had to go put on an 85 millimeter lens to know if I want to take this picture with an 85.
This is true.
There's not that many lenses that we're dealing with to begin with, particularly if you're a Leica guy. You're probably not going above 90 anyway. You're probably working with like three lenses. You really should just be able to look at the scene and know I need a 24 or I need a 50 or I need a 75. Like, it's ridiculous to think you need a preview lever, which is not accurate to begin with, to tell you what lens to need. So I'm glad they got rid of that on my camera. And I like the idea that they get rid of features instead of adding features. Yeah. It's kind of like an Apple mentality. Apple is very good at that too, just stripping it down and not giving you a ton of extra stuff.
Simplicity is the best thing to do, I think, with cameras.
Yeah, and I like that. That can definitely work good. Two more things I love about this camera is the modular aspect of it. And if you're looking at the video part of this, if not, don't worry about it though. But like I can put an EVF on this camera, which is a really nice thing that allows me to put different lenses on a camera. So I can put something like this Nikon 58mm 1.4 lens, which allows me to get some really cool looking out of focus elements. And since I'm using an EVF, I can actually focus the Nikon lens with the Leica body. So I can add an EVF onto the camera and I can add this grip on the bottom, which makes it easier to hold it if I'm using a larger non-Leica lens. Mm-hmm. The grip feels beautiful. It feels like the camera was made permanently with the grip. It doesn't feel like something that was screwed onto the camera. And I've had other cameras, some of my Nikons, where you add that grip and it feels like an added on grip. This camera doesn't do that. And then when I want to, I can easily take off the EVF and I can take off the grip at the bottom and the camera becomes small again, very close to the size of the M9. And it just feels really nice because it's small. It becomes back to a nice small camera, a little bit like your Fuji X100T, but still bigger than that and still heavier. But the modular aspect reminds me of my Nikon D4, which also did that. You could make it a small camera or you could make it a large camera, and it was perfect as a small camera and it was perfect as a large camera. So I absolutely love that. All right. And the last thing I'm going to say about what I don't like about the M240 is it is maybe like a millimeter bigger than an M9. I mean, it's almost imperceptible. The base plates are the same size, but the width, the thickness of the body is just a tiny bit thicker. And that tiny bit makes a really big difference.
Really?
It really does. It's a little heavier than the M9, and it makes a difference. And I realized that as I've gone back to doing my 365 project, that I carry the M9 far more than the M240 as my walk-around camera, because I find it makes a tremendous difference if I bring the M9 versus the M240. That's the little bit of weight difference, and that tiny bit of size does make a difference. So the fact that this camera is a little bigger than it should be is one of my dislikes. Wait, that's a dislike, right? We're on my likes. Okay, that'll be the first dislike. I got all confused there. Sorry
there
about
that. It's all right.
That's my dislike. Okay, so I'm going to run through the dislikes a little bit quicker, okay? Here's the next dislike for the camera is that this camera takes like 13 minutes to turn on from the point that you turn the power on to turning the camera on. It's insane. It's like a few seconds. You know, I'll do it on the video for people watching the video version. Like, you know, I'm going to turn it on now, waiting for the light to go off. Watch. Turn it on and you'll hear it click. Ready? On. Here's my click.
Yeah, right. It's like four or five shots before it'll turn on.
Yeah, you're pushing a button, and it won't take a picture. And that's really, really annoying. And in line with that is the fact that the buffer is small. So after about 7 images, it won't take pictures anymore. So it sounds like this. That was 5.
It's 5, yeah.
And it stopped. So it's super slow with the buffer. And here's the craziest thing, and I've used this camera now for a year and a half maybe, and I use it a lot. And I only realized this about a month ago. The buffer is different depending on what ISO you're set on.
That makes sense.
It's insane. Nobody else does that. Like, my Nikons don't care what ISO I go on there. It's 11 frames a second. End of story. This camera, if I'm at like 640, I get a decent like 2 frames a second. Maybe it's 3 frames a second, only for 6 or 7 shots. But I get that quick frame rate. Once I get to like 1600, 1250, then it really, really slows down to what you're hearing now, because I'm sure now it's on a high ISO. I'm on 1600 now. That's why it's super slow. So the idea that the buffer is so small and that it goes so slow is really, really annoying, okay? And being slow to turn on is slow to work. Number three on my list of what I don't like about the M240, inconsistent auto white balance. Like, if you're gonna be wrong on the white balance, I'm fine. Like, if you're gonna make everything a little blue, I'm good with that. You're gonna make everything a little red in auto white balance, fine, I can fix that. But you can't make one picture red and the next one blue.
Oh,
it's
all over the place?
Yeah, it just keeps switching. And I have pictures where they're like half a second apart, you know, when I'm shooting in sequence, and you'll see the color just keeps changing.
Oh, that's annoying.
Even though the light isn't changing, and the problem is—
Yeah, that's terrible.
I can't adjust that in Lightroom. I cannot make all those images look the same. I just can't. I can make this look good and that look good, but I can't make them match.
Yeah.
And that's like—
Yeah, the inconsistency within between the pictures is— Got to be pretty rough for post.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, you know. And list number four of what we don't like. What are we on? Like or don't like? This is the don't like. Okay, number four on the don't like is that the files don't look anything at all like my M9. Nothing. And the problem with that is, if you shoot these two cameras together, there are times that can be okay if you're doing, like, if I'm doing like a model shoot and I don't need it to be consistent for any reason, I'm just trying to create all different types of pictures. Like, let's say I photographed this girl in natural light and then I took her to the roof and then I did something with a beauty dish in a studio. So these three different types of pictures don't need to match in any way, shape, or form. So if I'm mixing my M9 and my M240 and they all look different, it's cool. But if I do something like an executive portrait and I'm trying to alternate between my M9 and my M240 of a person in the same place with the same lighting, and I'm producing images that look so dramatically different, it's a mess, because if we like the look of this, I can't get it to match the other camera.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I did a shoot with Ray Tamaro, who's our co-host on the show. I did a shoot with him recently where I started to shoot on my D3X and I asked Ray to finish the shoot on his D4. The images were identical. I was shocked. He was even in a different color space. He was in sRGB and I was in Adobe 1998. And on the screen, the images looked exactly the same.
Interesting.
From two cameras, years apart.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I would assume that that's a pretty big deal for Nikon to make sure that there is consistency between their files and the look of their files. I don't know how big of a deal that is for Leica.
Yeah, I mean, I guess just nobody cared that it doesn't match. Maybe they think you're not using them together, but there are times that that's really a problem. And the crazy thing is I actually wish I had another M9. I wish for my studio type work with the lights that I actually had two M9s that I could use for that work instead of an M240.
You're a big M9 fan.
I love that camera. I really do. As much as I like the M240, I do love my M9. And the last thing about the M240, which is built into rangefinders, period, so I'm not gonna blame Leica for this, is the idea that you can't shoot close. You lose a lot of shots.
Yeah, you cannot get close with a rangefinder.
You just can't. It's built into the camera that you can't. Now, if you use the EVF and add a different lens, like a Nikon lens or something, you can do it. I recently bought a close-up filter. It's a $26 attachment I screwed onto the front of my 50, and now I can shoot close with the 50, and I've been getting some interesting stuff on my Instagram using that $26 filter. But not being able to shoot close, which again, I don't really blame Leica for this one. It's kind of built into the platform, but it is annoying. There's a ton of times that I want to be in your face and I've got to kind of back up instead, and I have to be about an arm's length away, and it causes me to lose shots sometimes. So that's kind of annoying. All right. So that's my list of the five. I don't know if it was five and five, but what I love and dislike about it. All right. And that was Stephen Gomez's list for the Fuji X100. Okay.
Yep.
Right. X100T. All right. So we're going to wrap there for Camera Work Podcast number 39.
40.
Number 40. Sorry.
There
podcast number 40. Stephen, where do they find you?
You can find me on Instagram. That's where I post a lot of my street work and my portraits. It's underscore Stephen, Stephen Gomez, Gomez.
Excellent. You can find me on Instagram at John Ricard, JohnRicard. All right, people, thank you for tuning in. Hope you like this. Give us some feedback, and we're going to be doing some more of these very soon.
Thanks for having me.